This is the ending section of the Padmapanisadi Sutra. Mary had already gone through all of this last Tuesday. This Tuesday, I would like to focus on the section on meditation itself. Because it is the the bedrock of this practice. Without meditation, we are really not equipped to deal with any of the other factors of the Eightfold Path. A monk, having gone to the wilderness, to the shade of a tree or to an empty building, sits down, folding his legs crosswise, holding his body erect, and setting mindfulness to the fore. So we're starting off with the first jhana. And most of that first jhana is just establishing your place, where you're going to do this, cutting out as much as you can the influences from the world, in sight and sound, and also how it affects your mind. Because without that place, without that environment, again, the rest of meditation can't be practiced properly. There is basically too much distraction. Music is, of course, even in the background, is a distraction. And so are conversations. The mind always goes through them. Somebody's having a conversation somewhere and you can hear it. Try and cut these things out. It's not always easy. In my house, it's just about impossible. That's why I go to the truck. But again, those are this is the foundation of the foundation. This is how we start. We get rid of the distractions in a gentle way, of course. If we're sitting there either being annoyed at what's going on outside, or inside, we're already starting with one hand tied behind our backs here. So we go to the wilderness, to the shade of a tree, to an empty building, and we sit down and we tone down the distractions of the body. Just as it is. You sit comfortably. If there's any stress in the body, we recognize it and we try and minimize it. If there is pain, there is pain. If there's discomfort, if a little movement of the body can help it, then do so. If it's just discomfort, then it's just discomfort. It's present, so we deal with it. always mindful of the breath. He breathes in. Always mindful. He breathes out. When breathing in long, he notices, I am breathing in long. When breathing out long, he notices, I am breathing out long. Or when breathing in short, he notices, I'm breathing in short. Or when breathing out short, he notices, I am breathing out short. These are really simple instructions. But there are lots of ways to lose your way here. And a lot of it comes from one of the hindrances, precepts and practices. We either had a practice before where the breath was counted, the breath was examined, go from one breath to another breath to another breath. And that is not what these instructions are. These instructions are the breath is what it is. We notice it. That's all. Or if you haven't had a practice before, still you've had, you've read somewhere, you heard somewhere that meditation is for this purpose or for that purpose. Just about everybody who comes here for the first time wants to quiet the monkey mind. That's not what this meditation is. This meditation is noticing the breath. Notice it, the in-breath. Notice the out-breath. Once we have that as our anchor, as our focal point, then we can start to work. He trains himself. I will breathe in sensitive to the entire body. He trains himself. I will breathe out sensitive to the entire body. We're not trying to forget the body. We're not trying to make it do something. We're just aware of it. We are sensitive to the fact that there is a body. He trains himself, I will breathe in, calming bodily fabrication. He trains himself, I will breathe out, calming bodily fabrication. As we start this focus on the breath, these, as we are sensitive to the body, as we are aware of the body, and keep it limited to just that, then bodily fabrications will calm down. We're not trying to calm them down. They will calm down. It's a natural process. Nothing is getting drowned in the bathtub. We're calming, the body calms down. As John says, there is no significance to the actual thought, feeling, or something fabrication arising individually. There is no significance to it. They want you to notice it because that's how the mind works. But here we're seeing that they are not significant. They just arise and pass away. He trains himself. I will breathe in, sensitive to rapture. He trains himself. I will breathe out, sensitive to rapture. We notice it. We're sensitive to it. He trains himself. I will breathe in, sensitive to pleasure. He trains himself. I will breathe out, sensitive to pleasure. We notice when pleasure arises. We notice when it passes away. He trains himself. I will breathe in, sensitive to mental fabrication. He trains himself. I will breathe out, sensitive to mental fabrication. There's nothing to hold on to there. Even when the mental fabrications is about the fact that you're sitting there meditating. How good it is, how bad it is, doesn't matter. It's just a mental fabrication. Sit. As you know, and as brilliant as those insights are, they're still just mental fabrications. Whether they're true or not true, it doesn't matter. We see them arise and we see them pass away. He trains himself. I will breathe in, calming mental fabrication. He trains himself. I will breathe out, calming mental fabrications. As we are sensitive to it, as we watch this arising and passing away, they will calm. If we stop giving them significance, they run out of steam, basically. We're not feeding it anymore. He trains himself. I will breathe in, sensitive to the mind. He trains himself, I will breathe out, sensitive to the mind. The whole mind's involved here. It's not just those little fabrications. Those little fabrications are the little waves, you know, coming along. We're looking at the whole ocean, the whole sloshing thing inside our skull. He trains himself, I will breathe in, calming the mind. He trains himself, I will breathe out, calming the mind. As we do this, the mind calms. The idea that we do this meditation to get into the state of calm is a very subtle, long way of approaching it. Right? I was asked just a couple of days ago, somebody who was here, he said, oh, I want to come back to this meditation one day because I felt so calm. And I said, well, that's not really why we do this. You know, it may be a byproduct at some point, but we do this to be sensitive to the distractions that are going on. He trains himself. I will breathe in, steadying the mind. He trains himself. I will breathe out, steadying the mind. It's calm. It's steady. You're starting to get your hands on the tiller. Starting to have this mind no longer be your mind. It's just the mind. And you can actually guide it. He trains himself. I will breathe in, releasing the mind. He trains himself. I will breathe out, releasing the mind. I'm not having a chokehold on it anymore. I can release it. It's okay. Let the mind do whatever the mind wants to do. We're here, we're sensitive to it. and that's it. He trains himself. I will breathe in, focusing on inconstancy. He trains himself. I will breathe out, focusing on inconstancy. This is what we're seeing. We're seeing the impermanence of the mind, right here and right now, which is just another function of everything that's inconstant. So is the mind. He trains himself. I will breathe in, focusing on dispassion. He trains himself. I will breathe out, focusing on dispassion. Because we now know that this mind is just as impermanent as everything else, it loses its importance for us. We're no longer passionate about this great mind. Yes, it's a very helpful thing to have. But we see it do its job. We see it jumping up and down, trying to catch our attention minute after minute. And we realize that it's not that important. This is not the center of our universe anymore, this mind. It's just the mind. We're not passionate about it anymore. He trains himself. I will breathe in, focusing on cessation. He trains himself. I will breathe out, focusing on cessation. Inconstancy, dispassion, cessation.
Sounds like three marks.
There's probably a deeper part of this too. But you know, as with all the suttas, the more you read them, the more these singular words pop up. Sometimes, you know, I was looking at the word cessation, and I couldn't quite come up with a concrete example of that. But it's the end of this progression from realizing that things are impermanent, losing our passion for that object, for that mind object, and it's not the cessation of the mind, right? Because the mind goes on.
No, it's the cessation of craving.
Cessation of craving.
And your intention. You know, like that inconstancy, anicca, this passion for anatta starts to extinguish the root of craving. And then cessation, there is cessation.
And then he trains himself. I will breathe in, focusing on relinquishment. He trains himself. I will breathe out, focusing on relinquishment. I like that term, relinquishment.
I mean, they're talking about right intention.
Yeah.
It's essentially, that's what it is. All of them are talking about right
intention. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's
a direction
the right intention tripping all the way through.
Yeah, right.
And the relinquishment, to me, sounds like a very gentle form of abandoning. Just leave it behind. There's not even an effort there. It's just leave it behind. It no longer has any importance.
Relinquishment is the fruit of dispassion. Mm-hmm. And seeing it as what it really is.
Yeah.
Again, you were saying it's, there's no heavy lifting to put this down. It just is understood. So therefore, why would you be involved with it?
Yeah, why would you pay attention to it anymore? Thank you.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, Jane, what do you have to say for yourself?
Wow, that was kind of cool. Thank you. I like all those words. Inconstancy, dispassion, cessation, relinquishment. Pretty cool. Mm-hmm. I like what was said. Relinquishment is the fruit of dispassion.
Mm-hmm.
That's really a good way to think about it. So yeah. I really appreciated this breakdown. So thank you.
Yeah, I saw it there, and it's part of this huge sutta. But, I did it this way because I've had, this long issue with meditation, having a hard time with it. And this part of the sutta showed me, where where that hard time was coming from, because I wasn't paying attention to the actual instructions. That's really the instructions are there, and they are all you need. But I come in with, 30 years of something else still rattling around in my brain, and also 30 years of thinking I've got it figured out, and that I'm the smart guy, and that nobody else, certainly not this crazy bald guy, is going to tell me how to do it. It takes the repetition of these suttas, and these lines, to finally bring it home.
It's a purpose statement.
Mm-hmm.
It's telling you what this practice is for.
Yeah, because without this foundation of this simple technique, the rest falls apart. There is no mindfulness without concentration, without non-destructiveness. And without mindfulness, there is nothing carrying the Eightfold Path forward. Every aspect of the Eightfold Path starts with the mindfulness of that factor. You have to have that in mind. You can't have it in mind if you're distracted, if the thing is rattling on, and if you keep giving importance to that rattling thing in your head. It'll keep on. You can't choke it, but you can give it its place. Mind is what it is. Dull mind, brilliant mind, doesn't matter. The mind is what it is. And it's good enough to do what you need to do here. So let it do its thing. Don't give it any importance. That's it. Go to the back room.
Thank you, Julia. Thank you, Mom, for the teaching.
How was your practice these days?
Very good. I too have had many years of practicing something else,
mm-hmm,
since I was 12.
Yeah.
So imagine how conditioned,
yeah,
it's difficult to get rid of,
mm-hmm,
a mantra.
Oh, yeah.
But
I was never that deep into it, but I was in there at some point.
Yeah, with my family, that's what
right.
you know, so it was like the bedrock of our family. We all sat and meditated.
All these hippie families are all
just, yeah. So I shouldn't say I'm so happy, but anyway, you start to realize that you don't need, you know, another thought, because that's what a mantra is. It's just another thought,
right.
You know. So it's almost easy just to go. It's easy to go to the breath. It really is, and it does bring you to a level of depth that is it's very sublime. You know.
Yeah.
I really enjoy the practice, you know. And, sometimes, like you say, sometimes the mantra pops back in. That's just a thought.
Mm-hmm.
So you just go back to your breath again, just like any other thought. You know, you don't treat it with any type of like reverence. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
And this idea was already prevalent in the Buddhist time. He just picked up on the fact that this is the one thing that I can't screw around with, you know. Well, people have tried it later on, but this is clean enough and it doesn't get contaminated. It's a signpost that doesn't get contaminated with the mind too much. You can actually use this to, it's that post that the elephant gets tied to.
Well, everybody has breath.
Right.
It's easy.
If not, you're in bigger trouble than this.
No pronunciations, what I'm saying? It's just
right.
It's your breath. It's something that you carry with you until,
until you don't anymore.
The last one, right?
Yeah.
Exactly. So, but just like any, I enjoy the practice. I really do.
Good.
Yeah.
Because
it makes you. Another thing about the breath is just like the lungs breathe, the heart pumps, the mind thinks.
Right.
But when you with the breath, it kind of steadies your mind, so that like Matt said, you're not craving at these things in the past or these things in the future.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like you kind of like direct your mind to a spot where you can enjoy this present moment instead of looking somewhere else and getting distracted by everything in life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it keeps you on a set, and that's what calms your mind, because your mind is not bouncing from here to there like a ping pong ball.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually staying, and going the middle way.
Got some guidance.
Yeah.
Relaxes. Calms.
Yeah. So thank you very much.
Mike.
That's a good job, Ron. I like the way you presented that. Very it's actually meditative in its own way.
Yeah, calming. It was.
what I do, not that matters what I do, but I'm going to talk, right? So, I don't let, or I should say, I don't engage with anything that comes into my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I sit silent, still, understanding that the mind is going to be a mind. I do not attach, so that take me from this center where I'm at. No matter what it is, there's no concentration actually that was going to bring me into any particular mode of thought, so to say, to control the mind, which I've been counterproductive. So I don't even let that occur. I just sit silently. As things arise, I recognize them for what they are, and I have dispassion for all that process, understanding that it's flowing through, they're not to be pitched if I want to. And I find that, when I do that, the passage of time is, next thing I know, it's an hour, and it's time, at that point in time, I feel very, after I finish the meditation, I feel very, very calm, peaceful, and clear mind.
Ready for today.
The other thing I just want to mention, have you guys ever seen the movie A Beautiful Mind?
Mm-hmm.
You see, he obviously had Russell Crowe, wasn't it?
Russell Crowe? Yeah.
Russell Nash.
Yes. He had all those distractions from his troubled mind. But at the very end of the movie, he had actually was able to recognize that all these distractions and all these voices that were in his head were it's not that they weren't there, but they were silenced so such that they didn't interrupt the calmness of his mind. So I kind of think that's what we're trying to get to when we do meditate.
Mm-hmm.
So it is a good movie, you guys.
Yeah. I saw it a long time ago.
Good job. Thanks.
Thank
you. Then, so from a perspective of an anxious mind, that with that mindful state of mind, the breathing, especially the exhale, excites the parasympathetic nervous system, which stops any flow of cortisol through the body, which is the thing that makes you tense.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I know, with my awareness, that during jhana, this old diesel engine starts warming up because I can feel the cortisol leaving me, the body decompressing, the inflammation going down, and the negative tilt, the negative bias going away. The anxious mind tends to look at negativity as Velcro and positivity as Teflon. You know, it wants to grasp to the negative.
Right.
So that's one thing. So when you said about the calming as a byproduct, I think that's a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that it's an intention of meditation. No. It's just something that would happen while doing that breath and getting that heartbeat and body geared down. And jhana is really good. Well, that's what it does. I mean, that's just a fact. Did you say something about the frameworks? This sutta,
they always sneak in there.
So one thing, the way I see it, is that the ego, the anatta, the not self, is anchored in the physical world, which is impermanent.
Mm-hmm.
So there you have two. Okay, which then is by fact prone to dukkha. With the meditation, the realization of the impermanence, the understanding of the impermanence, that awareness allows, for me, have space, emptiness. Time is a, as I see it, a byproduct of the ego. In other words, time only exists in the physical world. Does not exist in the non-physical world. It only exists in the physical world. The ego, it's a construct that the ego, is not self, has fabricated.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, in that state of jhana, where it becomes timeless and empty, I kind of course, as soon as I recognize it, it's gone. But during that time, that's no longer, I'm not anchored in the physical world for that brief moment. And I think that's what jhana can do as I practice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but we're still, remember, it starts out being sensitive to the body and to the physical world.
Absolutely.
It doesn't cease to exist. It's still there. We're sensitive to it. We just no longer see the importance of it.
Yeah, perhaps me just not getting into the distraction of the physical.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe I'm interpreting that as it not being there. Perhaps.
Yeah.
I don't know. No, I'm not there yet.
You know, if it's something that has always been an overwhelming thing, when it ceases to be important anymore, that is like it's more like a relinquishment than actually
that's right.
Going away.
Yeah. The condition of calmness, your mind has to be calm for you to start experiencing and having insights to the three marks.
Yeah.
And that's really that is the environment of insight. Without calm, you can't have any insight. It's all intellectual, but that's what the calm is. So people go away with the byproduct of I'm so calm, but eventually they'll start putting the three marks into that. And that's what you're observing. That's what you're able to see.
The difference between the intellectual understanding of the three marks and the actual having it as an understanding. I hate to say gut feeling, but the reality of it becomes clear. The reality of the three marks instead of the idea of the three marks. Start out with the idea and then we calm the mind.
Wouldn't that be where this passion comes from?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's off the cushion. You start experiencing less reaction to these stimuli and you recognize that this is not me, this is not mine. And that's off the cushion, walking around, insight. And that's when you put relinquishment.
Non-identity.
Well, thank you very much. Really appreciated your insights into jhanas and where the kind of discussion led. Relinquishment is a neat word. It's sort of a gentle release, or the Buddha's used the term casting off the yoke. It's like it's as if you keep walking, but you just undid the clasp, the yoke. It just falls off. You didn't even bend down. You didn't even change your posture. It's just released. And
the traces fall off the horse.
Right. Yeah, I think that, as Matt said, that's sort of a natural progression after you experience this cessation. You see this experience of calm or just, okay, I'm the one who's putting this in motion again. Like, I'm the one who's following the trap or whereas you don't need to do that anymore. You can just,
Also, it's emptying the mind of such things.
Pardon?
It's emptying the mind of such things.
Mm-hmm. But it's not a shoveling out.
No,
letting it drain.
It's a natural. Exactly. I think it's a. It will happen during the state that emptiness.
Mm-hmm.
During that state of I don't want to say calm of jhana, where the physical world, time and things that are permanent aren't being identified. So there's this emptying, kind of it's flushing out where these things don't matter. So therefore they have no importance. Mm-hmm. No reason to even think of them. Is that true?
Yes, it's actually, I would think it's like a natural occurrence that goes with, it's part of the, again, the process of having a calm mind.
Mm-hmm.
She said it's a byproduct of it, so.
It's almost like this, you're in this dispassionate, and use words like relinquishment or renunciation. Those seem to be declarative, which is, to me, not what the Buddha is saying, because understanding allows you to have that dissipate. Where renunciation seems very declarative.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yes. Not to get into words.
No, yeah.
But
no,
relinquishment is a little bit less declarative. Renunciation seems to be, I've decided.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Where understanding, which is naturally.
You see the words, both the well, again, we're talking translations, of course. You see the words relinquishment and renunciation and things like that used kind of in the same manner. And I wonder if it's just we're just picking different translations for the same concept.
Yeah. And I mean, I think, you know, with what Julia said and how you presented the sutta, the key thing, what Julia said, that there was a meditative aspect to how you presented it,
mm-hmm.
which this Anapanasati Sutta, so it's about the breath, and every line, I'll breathe in sensitive to mm-hmm. the mind, I'll breathe out sensitive to the mind, I'll breathe in sensitive to inconstancy, I'll breathe out sensitive to inconstancy, I'll breathe in.
It's almost the
script. You're breathing, that's the whole point, that's the whole thing. The Buddha is just keep mm-hmm. directing you back to your breath. The intention part of inconstancy, you know,
dispassion,
cessation, those things are sort of
their endpoints.
They're endpoints that returning to the breath will foster.
This whole section is just a description of a meditation session.
Yeah, and exactly.
It gives you the actual, you know, step by step, you know, and it's not going to happen like that all the time, but
right.
These are the sequences that go on in this mind and in the meditation.
I almost think that, like, that's the second noble truth is, like, the declarative thing. Mm-hmm. These are my goals. Mm-hmm. These are what I'm doing this for.
Mm-hmm.
And to get to right view, you're developing this practice of meditation and developing mindfulness. And then this natural occurrence of dispassion and putting down just naturally happens.
Mm-hmm.
Because that
the third noble truth,
right,
is then
the promise
consequence.
This is the natural occurrence of doing this practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you're sort of talking about the mechanics of mm-hmm. how restraint develops here. And mm-hmm. Buddha's sort of saying the new orientation point is the breath, not where you were going before, not thoughts, feelings, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Now it's, there's something changing that. There's something mm-hmm. slowing down the meter of it.
Right.
Every time.
It's almost like that this would be a description of the Buddha's first meditation session. Yeah. When he sat down after he fasted himself to death almost, he realized
here's
what
not
out there, it's in here. So how do I do this? Oh, let me try just getting these distracted. I've already gotten rid of all the distractions outside. Now, mm-hmm. see what happens when the distractions in here start to fall away. There it is.
Thank you,
bro. Thank you. And we shall end. Like.
That doesn't bring you to some joyful engagement.
Right. Totally. Well, and that's that, you know, having a direct experience with impermanence is the practice, is a fruit of the practice. The breath is that
model is that there you are able to have a direct experience with impermanence.
Moment by moment.
Moment by moment by moment.
The most impermanent thing that you probably come in contact with, to break down the scientific side of it. But.
I find that even I don't have to sit on the cushion a lot. I mean, I do, you know, but during the day, it just naturally happens.
Yeah.
Like, if I find myself, you know, sitting down or listening or something, whatever, even my student, like listening to my students, your mind naturally goes to your breath, almost automatically, you know.
That's what Kevin's saying.
Yeah.
That's the walking around mechanics of restraint.
Right.
And it doesn't happen in any other way because you develop concentration and mindfulness. You're there at that moment and you can be restrained.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what John would always say. You know, when the quality of your mind, you know, becomes agitated, no problem. Recognize it, acknowledge it, and come back to the sensation of breathing. You don't have to be in your cushion to do that. Mm-hmm. You can be in the world.
Frankly, that's where it has to happen.
Right.
Recognition, though, too, from my experience, is recognizing that the anatta, the ego, is at play, especially if there's agitation.
Mm-hmm.
That's always an indication for me that there's identification with the ego's identifying.
Because anxiety tends to take over.
Right,
yeah. It just drowns out everything else in your sense of identity.
Yeah.
Now you become this anxiety. While it could be just a feeling. Just a physical feeling.
I think they're all just this. It's every situation is different. But what Matt was saying, though, with the practice of the Dhamma and Jhana, the recognition of that it's a feat that one should give himself credit for, recognizing when they're agitated, because it's the tendency is to keep going with it.
Right. Don't skip it. Recognize there's agitation, and when agitation has passed away, recognize agitation is not there anymore.
That's right.
And it's so much more effective. We're talking about Western mentality to force it down.
Yeah, that's right.
Comply, you know, get in line versus.
Or the opposite, to really identify with it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I have a daughter with a lot of anxiety, and that's what I hear. I'm anxious. I have anxiety.
Right.
I have anxiety. Therefore, whatever.
Right.
it requires a lot of calming breath to get out of that part. I have anxiety.
Right. To decouple there is.
Yeah.
Right.
There is. There is anxiety. I understand. Think about it. All right. Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what is done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. They are able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied. They remain unburdened with duties and frugal in their ways. They are peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. They do not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. They are always mindful that all beings be at ease, whatever living beings there may be. Whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. They are always mindful to not deceive another or despise any being in any state. They abandon anger and ill will with ease, never wishing harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart, the wise disciple cherishes all living beings. They radiate kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, they remain refined mindfulness. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, having completed the path, they do not give birth to another moment rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths.
Thank you, Ram.
Thank you.